Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Sabrina Merchant. We just recorded part one of this kind of crossover thing that we'll do every so often on the Silver Screen and Roll show. So go and check out that. We talked about the Pau Gasol situation. We talked about the matchup or preseason in general, what our expectations there are going to be. And then we talked about what LeBron's hashtag of choice is going to be this year, which was especially delightful. But beyond that, on this show, we're gonna since Sabrina is the resident Clippers expert on the Silver Screen and Roll Slack, we are going to talk about the matchup between the Lakers and Clippers this year. But to start that, Sabrina, this is the second show of the night that you're going to deal with me for. Are you prepared for this? Like, are you an alcohol drinker? Like, when you're getting ready for, when you know going into the night that you're going to do two shows with me back to back, is it just like, you know what? I usually am not a drinker, and tonight I'm just mainlining whiskey. Like, what's the path?
I actually made brownies earlier today, so that's that's going to do it.
Were they instant mixed brownies? Because LeBron's going to be pissed.
These are so full on, you know, from scratch with like baking chop and everything. Yeah.
Well, now I'm hungry. We're going to take a quick 15-minute break here, and I'm going to go eat some brownies. All right, let's go ahead and dive in though. The way we're going to do this, segment one, we're going to talk about why we think the Lakers have an advantage, or why we think, or what it would look like if the Lakers won in a potential series. Segment two, we're going to talk about what that looks like if the Clippers were to come out on top. And then in segment three, we'll give our thoughts on how we think it would actually go. So if the Lakers were to win a series, which I think that they would be the betting favorites if heading into any series that they were to play. If the Lakers were to win a series, what do you think that would look like? Like, who in particular would really have to excel for you to say, yep, the Lakers are winning that one?
It's interesting. During the regular season games between the Lakers and the Clippers last year, LeBron wasn't a particularly high scorer. It was Anthony Davis who was doing a lot of the scoring load for the Lakers. And that was because he was being guarded by some combination of Patrick Patterson and Jamichael Green. Just guys who were really ill-suited to contend with him whatsoever. Now the Clippers have Serge Ibaka. So my gut is that if the Lakers were to beat them, that LeBron would have to do a bit more scoring than we saw from him in this matchup last year. It's not exactly rocket science. You know, the Lakers' two best players have to play well. But I do think that because the Clippers, you know, interior defense is a little bit more shored up now than it was last year, that LeBron would have to do more, which, you know, how can he do more? But yeah, I don't think he even scored like 20 points that last time they played each other in the bubble, but that would just not be acceptable if they were to win a playoff series. Like, he'd have to go for a lot more than that.
So because of the Ibaka addition, do you think the Clippers are noticeably better suited to deal with the Lakers this year, or just like a better team overall? Because you paid a lot closer to attention to the Clippers than I have. Mm-hmm. The extent of my Clippers experience is basically like what they're trying to dunk on with the Lakers, which winds up just being like a soft spike that every Laker fan can in turn like just send away. I'm kind of curious, you know, on your thoughts on their offseason in general. Like, do you think this is a significantly better team than they were last year? Because they kind of have to be.
During the regular season, I am not sure that the Clippers are going to be materially better than they were last year, because the amount of energy that Montrezl Harrell brings on a day-to-day basis is literally unparalleled in the NBA. Like, nobody just plays as hard as he does on a night-to-night basis. And that was just lacking on the Clippers last year. They didn't have guys who really came with that effort every night, not like Trez. So I think you might see a little bit of a gap in their win-loss record compared to last year. But I do think for the postseason, their top eight makes more sense this year than it did last year, which is why I think they would contend better with the Lakers. Just because, like, I think Montrez is going to be a really interesting fit with the Lakers because they have the particular pieces to complement him very well. You know, like, Mark Gasol and Anthony Davis are both bigs who can stretch the floor and protect the rim. The Clippers didn't have that with Trez. They just said, here, you're going to play the five and we're going to go super small and like have Lou Williams and Landry Shamet play at the guards and just make everything your fault.
It was like the bad version of like what Charles Barkley thinks of small ball. Right. Where, you know, the Lakers, quote unquote, small ball was with Anthony Davis at the five and LeBron at the four, which isn't really small. And AD is a good enough rim protector where you can make that work. But but when Charles saw them going small, he every time anybody touched the ball on the court, he was yelling mouse in the house.
Right. Like they're literally closing games, you know, with Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and Montrezl Harrell. And that is a small lineup. And, you know, you have two guys in there who are just not good enough defensively to make it work, especially when you switch as regularly as the Clippers did last year. That just allows LeBron to say, oh, Lou's in the game. Let's just keep running screens until I get on him and we're good to go.
Yeah.
I do think another reason why I think the Clippers are a little bit potentially better suited to match up with the Clippers this year is that I realize I'm in the wrong part of the segment, aren't I? But sorry.
It's always mostly guidelines. It's like Pirates of the Caribbean. It's mostly guidelines is what I throw out there at the beginning of the show.
Their defensive coordinator, so to speak, Rex Kalamian, was a big proponent of switching, and he is no longer an assistant coach with the Clippers. So I'm not sure how committed to that system the Clippers will be, like if they'll just go, you know, individual man-to-man defense more often because that's no longer their defensive philosophy. Like they brought in a coach from Miami who's heading up their defense, Dan Craig. And Miami did not switch as much. So, or they tried not to, at least against the Lakers, even though it didn't always work out that well. But I think those principles make it a little bit more interesting, you know, if the Clippers were to come up against the Lakers, just in terms of how they try to defend them.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the things I'm really going to be looking for in this matchup for the Lakers to have success is, so the Clippers traded away some of their identity. Right. So just like the Lakers did, basically. The Lakers are a very different fundamental team than they were last year, but a potentially better team because of that shift in identity.
Right.
Whereas like if Ibaka isn't noticeably better on AD then, or if Zubats doesn't take a step forward and AD is still able to take advantage, the Clippers now have less firepower to deal with, to try to even those odds. And that's something that, like, if the Lakers are going to look as dominant as, now they didn't, they never, they looked dominant in stretches against the Clippers last year. They didn't, the Clippers gave them a tougher out or were a tougher out in the games that they played against the Lakers than anybody that the Lakers face in the postseason. I don't think the Lakers are going to get away with not seeing the Clippers this year. I just think the step up from Doc to Lou is significant.
Okay.
And like you said earlier, the postseason rotation makes a lot more sense. So I think the Lakers aren't going to be able to get out of the conference without seeing the Clippers. But I still think the Lakers are, I would say if you're grading on a scale of, you know, to 10, I'd, you know, and you have the Lakers as a 10, I'd still probably have the Clippers as like an 8.5, where they're still good. They're still very good, but there's a bit of a gap there. And I'm interested to see, like, you know, last year the Clippers were able to get away at times with Beverly either not being 100% or, you know, just kind of working off of reputation for how good he is defensively. He's going to have to be that good against Schroeder. Like he's going to have to be able to stay in front of Schroeder when the Lakers go to the bench. When they do go to the bench, you know, Lou Williams might have to spend some time on Schroeder. And that is a mismatch right from the get-go. And that's before you get to potentially Lou being on the court when LeBron starts picking on him again. And then, you know, with you know, for this Lakers team, it's so deep and it can come at you in waves, in ways that, you know, over the course of a 7-game series, it wouldn't surprise me, or what it would look like, I think, if the Lakers were to win a series against them, the Lakers just wear them down. So by the time you get to games 5, 6, and 7 of that series, you're looking at a very tired Clippers team because they have to contend with the Lakers coming at them in waves for so there won't be any down minutes against the Lakers like there were last year. Whether it be regular season games, postseason games, whatever, this is a much deeper team in a season that I think usually I would kind of roll my eyes at depth, but this year depth is really going to matter. And I think if the Lakers are going to win, it's going to look kind of ugly at the back half of the series.
I like the point that you made about, you know, the Lakers sort of sacrificing some of their identity, but getting better. I didn't think Dwight Howard or JaVale McGee were good at all against the Clippers last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they would be good against them this year. So
yeah,
that trade-off that they've made, I think doesn't really affect them in this particular matchup. So
yeah.
You know.
I mean, the idea, because I think Zubats is going to play a much bigger role in the organization. You know, that one of the reasons Doc isn't there anymore. And
yes.
One of the reasons Trez isn't there anymore is because they wanted to open up room for Zubats. I don't think Gasol is a very good matchup for Zoo. He's a bigger guy. Zoo can't move him around the way that he wants to be able to move around other guys that he's going to see over the course of the year. And then on top of that, Gasol is going to space the floor, mm-hmm. the floor, and force Zubats out there onto the perimeter, something that he is not particularly comfortable doing. So yeah, that's a great point. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we're going to quickly spend some time on what it would look like if the Clippers do come out on top. If the Lakers were to see the Clippers in the series, what are the things to really be concerned about heading into it? Would you agree heading into this about the Lakers being, you know, if you were to just best team in the conference being a 10 and then the Clippers being 8.5, or would you have them higher than that?
I guess I just wouldn't put the Lakers at a 10. You know, well, I don't mean it
as if like they're perfect.
They're perfect, right? Just that they're the best team so that they're at a 10. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably put the Clippers at a 9 then.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not that far off then.
Right. I think that there is, you know, good reason to believe that the Lakers are better, but it's not like a sizable gap. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So if you were a Clippers fan, which I'm not convinced you're not because you're a Duke fan. I just saw a lot of like an oddly high number of crossover between Duke fandom and Clippers fandom growing up.
JJ Redick has become very lovable.
Not in the Irwin household, but if you were a Clippers fan and you were looking for reasons of optimism against this Lakers, where would you start?
I would start with Paul George, which I know is not what you think of when you think of the playoffs, but Paul George did very well against the Lakers last year. He is just such a big two guard that there's nobody who can really defend him on the, like any team really, least of all the Lakers. So he just has a really significant matchup advantage, in my opinion, because you have to put LeBron and Kawhi. And so that leaves somebody less equipped. Like, I mean, even if you put KCP on, Paul George, who I think is a good defender and I think does a very good job of fighting through screens, he's 6'5", and Paul George is 6'8", 6'9". So it's just, it's very hard to contest that jumper.
And KCP's a small 6'5".
Right. Like, it's not like he has, you know, a tremendous wingspan. Like, Schroeder's 6'1", but he's got like a 6'7", 6'8" wingspan. Like, there's ways to get around that. But yeah, like you said, KCP is somewhat of a small 6'5". So that's where I would start. I think PG is just a really good, you know, matchup against the Lakers. And I think they got even smaller on the wing because they lost Danny Green and replaced him with Wes Matthews, who I like what Matthews brings in certain matchups. Like, you know, I think in terms of defending somebody like Jimmy Butler, I think he's far more helpful than Danny Green. But in terms of defending Paul George, I like a guy who's just a little bit taller. And that's where you miss a Danny Green. So the fact that the Lakers got a little bit smaller on the wing, you know, it requires LeBron to do more. And that's where the Clippers have their best players, right? PG and Kawhi. So you just got to have LeBron doing a lot of defending. You got to hope that Kuz defensive performance in the bubble is a real thing and that he can be used on Kawhi and Paul George. And then you just got to hope they miss some jumpers because they're going to get some open looks.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always said, you know, basically in this modern era, since like Tim Duncan retired, the team that gets the best wing play wins the series, basically. That's, you know, especially as you get deeper into the postseason, where the team that has had Kevin Durant on it has won championships. And obviously LeBron has won his fair share and Kawhi has won a couple. And these elite wings tend to decide how these series go. And that's why, you know, like Pandemic P was such a blow to the Clippers, because that's usually a major advantage to them. Like, just in terms of the way that their roster is built up, they can overwhelm you on the wing. But if Paul George isn't kind of ready for that, then what? You know,
right.
And you saw what that looked like when the Nuggets were able to rip off three straight wins, down 3-1. I still agree with you though about the idea in theory before mm-hmm. you get into like the intangibles of whether or not George is ready for those moments. I what do you think about, you know, AD coming out there and defending Paul George? Is that something you would advise? Would you want him closer to the rim? Would you want him on Kawhi and then maybe see if you can get away with Kuz or Wesley Matthews on Kawhi?
So the Lakers have started most games against the Clippers with AD on Kawhi because they've had mm-hmm. another center, you know, protecting the rim. But then once you go small, you don't want AD to be your primary wing defender because then you have nobody on the back line, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I love LeBron, but that's just not his best skill as a defensive player.
No.
So
he's very good at pointing to where somebody else should have been, though.
He is very good at that. Elite pointer, yes. So I guess it depends at what point in the game, you know, you're considering what AD's defensive responsibilities are. Because obviously, if Gasol's on the floor, yeah, put Anthony Davis on Kawhi. I think that's the best way of optimizing the Lakers' resources. But if Gasol's not on the floor, like there's no chance Anthony Davis should be leaving the paint because somebody's got to stay there. So it's just, it leaves the, you know, Lakers with some tough choices to have to make because, you know, you have to have LeBron be the engine of your offense too, right? And you can't wear him out by having him defend Kawhi all game, all series, right? And, or alternately putting him on Paul George. So that's why I think it's just, it's a tough matchup because the Lakers, like, they have really great, like, Anthony Davis plays like a wing sometimes and LeBron James mm-hmm. is a wing, but when they play smaller, like, those guys are no longer wings technically in that lineup, which is why it's a little more challenging.
Is there, how about the Clippers defensively? You mentioned at the top about how Ibaka makes them better equipped to deal with AD. Mm-hmm. Do you think, you know, this is a much more explosive Lakers team. Do you think the Clippers are going to be able to scramble around the way that they have to be able to contend with now, you know, if KCP's shooting in the postseason last year in the bubble, if that's real, if AD's shooting in the bubble was real, if Kuzma ever is real, are there ways for the Clippers to defend the Lakers while still being able to outscore them on the other end? Like, so basically what I'm asking is, can Lou Williams play in the series? Because if he can, I think that's a major advantage to the Clippers.
Yeah, that's a good question. So when the Clippers first signed Ibaka, I was just like really intrigued about that potential fit because I thought, oh, here's a guy who can like play next to Zubac. He can man the center position. He's like a, you know, you don't get that 4-5 combination very often among individual players these days. And then I realized like over the last 2-3 years, he's almost exclusively played center for the Raptors. Mm-hmm. He doesn't do the perimeter defense thing anymore. And that's something that I just, you know, hadn't paid attention to because it's hard to pay attention to all 30 teams in the league, especially ones in the Eastern Conference, right?
Completely different country.
Yeah.
It's a hockey team.
So the more I think about it, like I like Ibaka a lot. I still think that, you know, he's a more mobile center defensive player than Zubac is. And like, that's definitely an advantage that the Clippers have that they didn't have last year, which is important. But I do still worry about like how they're going to generate offense and put good defensive lineups on the floor, because the problem was that they didn't have a point guard last year that they trusted to also mm-hmm. play defense, right? Because like Patrick Beverley, I think he's a little bit overrated defensively, but he's still a good defensive player. Mm-hmm. And
especially given the way he's allowed to defend, like those reputation bit point guards, like they're allowed to hand check. They're allowed to get away with all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. He's still allowed to do that. And he's going to make him a better defender.
It's true. And then you've got, you know, Lou Williams on the other end of the spectrum who sets the table for his teammates and can score on his own, but then it's just an absolute liability on the other end. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the Clippers have really addressed that because they brought in Luke Kennard, who, in my opinion, is just a very similar player to Lou Williams. He's just a better mm-hmm. shooter, but he is one of the worst defenders you could possibly have in this situation because there are two players in the NBA who have a negative wingspan, like whose wingspan is shorter than their height. And Luke Kennard is one of them.
Yeah.
The other one's JJ Redick. So apparently they're just type.
I think that I really honestly think that that has a lot to do with like elite shooters. Having shorter arms really helps you as a shooter.
It's quite possible. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know that they have a defender they can put at that guard spot, you know, when they want to go small, so to speak, who can contend with Dennis Schroeder, or I mean, I guess it's just Dennis Schroeder. Like KCP's not really running the offense for the Lakers. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting wrinkle that the Lakers didn't have last year that I think makes them difficult to defend. The fact that the Clippers have shored up their interior defense with Ibaka makes me think that that's more important than whatever mm-hmm. perimeter defensive challenges they're going to have. Cause you know, you can always just like say like, okay, PG, like just go take this guy.
Yeah, right? That too.
And you know, you've got Kawhi and LeBron and like, that's a good enough outcome. Right. So my gut is that the interior stuff matters more than the perimeter stuff, but it is, I'm interested to see how Dennis Schroeder does against this Clippers team because he did really well against them as a member of the Thunder. Like those second units were just lit up by Schroeder.
I think it's going to continue. Let's take a quick second. That's going to be the segue that we offer as to how we think a series between the two teams plays out. So just a heads up, I should have said this at the very beginning of the show, but this is basically one of the first entries into something we're going to be doing throughout the preseason where we talk about the various contenders that the Lakers are going to have to get past either on their way to a championship or for a championship or whatever. Sabrina and I were joking before we started recording period that we should have just left the Clippers off and talked about literally every other team in the NBA.
28 other episodes.
Yeah, right. We could have even talked about some college teams and really...
Could Kentucky beat the Lakers? Right.
Exactly. That Cade Cunningham kid, like, is he better than Lou Williams right now? He is. But the thing that, you know, where I kind of sit here on this Clippers team is, and I said earlier in the show, and I think I'm going to keep on saying it, is... I like the fact that they basically built a postseason team. Mm-hmm. I like that they consolidated their rotation down to a team that is, you know, built to contend against a squad that's going to have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, where like against those two guys, you cannot have wasted minutes. And like last year, as we saw in the postseason, Reggie Jackson minutes were wasted minutes. Those are, It's just brutal to watch him out there. I think for this season, one of the concerns might be Kennard being, you know, kind of wasted because of how bad he is defensively. Lou Williams, the same kind of thing. And yet I still have the Lakers as a pretty heavy favorite. I might be being a homer. I'm a lot further away from the Clippers than you are. But if you were kind of sizing up these two teams heading into a Western Conference Finals, how would you feel going into it as you know, if you were asked, hey, you have to put something near and dear to the heart on the line. You have to put your career, your home, your Wednesday night podcast with me. In that case, you would put it on the Clippers, but how would you feel heading into it?
So it's interesting because last year I was leaning Clippers, and that a lot of it came down to the fact that I wasn't sure what Frank Vogel was going to look like as a playoff mm-hmm. coach. And now I think there is a reasonable body of evidence that Vogel is pretty good at this. Mm-hmm. He adjusted, you know, he came up with really detailed, competent game plans for every series. Like the Lakers got better pretty much every series as they went along, which is all you can really hope for. And even though I do believe the Clippers upgraded at coach going from Rivers to Ty Lue, I'm not as concerned about that gap as I was last year. So that's one thing that I think works in the Lakers' favor. And also, I just didn't know what Anthony Davis was going to look like later in the postseason because, you know, you and I have talked about this where in the regular season, there were some moments where it was just a little frustrating watching him because he was trying to do things that seemed out of his reach. And then lo and behold, when the playoffs came, like they were very much within his reach.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And it turns out like having pterodactyl arms allows you to reach things at different moments. It's the weirdest thing.
So I have just far more confidence in Anthony Davis and Frank Vogel this year than I did last year. And, you know, I think LeBron's better than Kawhi. I think AD's better than Paul George. And if those two players are better than the top two on the Clippers, then I think you'd have to go with the Lakers because like you said, the depth is no longer an advantage in the Clippers' favor.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, it, the Lakers basically swung a heavy disadvantage into, at worst, a 50-50 kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've turned that into a 50-50 kind of thing. Now, you know, it might be that I'm overrating depth now that the Lakers have it.
Yeah.
You know, it might be that might be where my analysis is coming from. But I look at more of it from like a, so I, one of the ways I think we misunderstand depth heading into a postseason is that we think, well, that rotation is just going to carry forward and those guys are going to be that much more fresh throughout the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
The way I kind of look at it though is from an option standpoint. So if KCP doesn't have it, Wesley Matthews might, you know, if Dennis Schroeder doesn't have it, Alex Caruso might, and vice versa. If Marc Gasol doesn't have it, well, then AD can play more at the five and LeBron can slide down at the four. If Montrezl Harrell doesn't have it, same kind of thing, but the math is a little different there.
Right.
And, you know, even while I like that the Clippers consolidated, they now have fewer options. So if Ibaka doesn't have it, and if he isn't a significant step up against AD, or if Zubats isn't the player that the Clippers think that he is.
Right.
Yeah. Then they don't have Trez as an option to come in there and provide some energy, a spark or whatever. I'm blanking on the point guard.
Patrick Beverley.
There you go. I was going to say Patrick Patterson, but it's not Pat. But if
he's still there,
I hope he plays.
Friend of Paul George is really helpful in earning a contract from the Clippers. Pat and Reggie are just cashing those checks still.
Hey man, I hope to one day have a friend like that. Harrison, you got to work harder. But if Patrick Beverley isn't, you know, if his defense continues to slide the way that we have seen over the last couple of years, if he isn't able to stay healthy, mm-hmm. then you're really relying on Lou Williams all over again. And they didn't do enough to shore up that rotation in ways that matter on the defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're just looking at it from a standpoint of the Lakers, the number of options that the Lakers have, if so-and-so doesn't have it compared to the Clippers, there's a lot smaller margin for error for the Clippers. And I think, you know, in a series that is this even on paper, you're talking about a 10 against a 9 or a 10 against an 8.5 or whatever. If it's this close, then you gotta try to minimize your variables. And I think mm-hmm. the Lakers have done a much better job of minimizing their variables and building up last year's roster and then even more so this year.
Yeah, for me, it really comes down to Beverly, because obviously, you know, if anything happens to one of the two stars, like, you know, throw it out. Like,
yeah.
The matchup is completely different, but Beverly is just irreplaceable in my opinion on the Clippers. Mm-hmm. And it's not a good position where your top three players,
that would terrify me, by the way,
are both irreplaceable. Because, like,
if I was a Clippers fan,
he's the only guard who plays any defense, because yeah. Lou Williams, Luke Kennard, Reggie Jackson, like, you're just not getting anything on the other end out of those three guys. And they have mm-hmm. very useful roles on offense. Don't get me wrong. Like, during the regular season, I'm sure they'll have nights where they go off for 20 points and you're like, yeah, that's what we keep these guys around. But you cannot play them in the playoffs, like in crunch time. I don't think you can get away with two of them on the court even one of them at times.
Yep.
So if Beverly is not available, and we saw he missed 5 games in the playoffs last year because of calf injury, he is notoriously brittle. Like, things happen to him and he's getting older. And like you said, they didn't do anything to address that position. Whereas the Lakers obviously have counters, you know, if things were to happen to any of their players. The Clippers, I mean, again, I'm kind of just repeating what you said, but like, I like their top eight a lot. Any of those eight go out, you know, throw it out. Like, I don't like it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Last thing before we get out of here, what do you think of the dynamic between the Lakers and Clippers? Because, like, LeBron all but named Patrick Beverley by name when he was talking about the amount of shit that the team was talking over the course of the year. And, you know, I know Lakers fans hate to call it a rivalry. I was hoping that we would take a step closer to rivalry because of some postseason result mm-hmm. That we would see last year. We still haven't seen that quite yet, but it's also not a rivalry. You know, it's this weird, like, middle ground where the Clippers take pot shots whenever they can possibly sneak in a pot shot. Mm-hmm. They, you know, the
Patrick Beverley's, Rivers did a lot of that last year too.
He did. He did. And now you have, I don't think Lou was that kind of a coach, but
especially, you know, not with LeBron.
But I could still kind of see him behind. He won't do it as overtly as Doc, but I'm sure behind the scenes, he's probably going to be, you know, needling the guys and talking about like, oh man, we got to beat big bad LeBron, you know, doing so sarcastically so that those guys really get riled up about it. And I don't know. I'm curious about how you see this notion of rivalry between these two organizations.
It's interesting because there are so many ties between both organizations.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Zubac started his career on the Lakers. Lou Williams spent time with the Lakers. Patrick Beverley was drafted by the Lakers. Ty Lue played here, was almost hired by the team as a head coach.
They gave him a cake.
Then you've got Trez, right? Yeah. Obviously, Avery Bradley's gone, but I think there's somebody else on this team who used to play for the Clippers. Jared Dudley used to play for the Clippers. But that is less important now that Doc Rivers is gone. But there's so many threads connecting these two teams that there's going
Jerry
to
West
be
over
some
there, no.
Jerry West over there. Right. It's funny. They call him Logo without like any sort of attribution. So like, I have to like pay attention when they're talking. But yeah, there's so many threads connecting these two teams that even if they weren't in the same city, oh, the Morrises, sorry.
Yeah.
They're twins who play on different teams and one is subsidizing the other one to play in the NBA. That's like the most important one.
Yeah.
And then obviously, like, you know, Lou having coached LeBron James to his, you know, great title in Cleveland. So even if they weren't in the same city, I think there would be some level of acrimony between these two teams. And I'm of the belief that you can only have a rivalry if you both teams beat each other in the playoffs. So by that definition, we're 2 years away from these teams being a rival because they've never met in the playoffs.
Yeah.
At least 2 years away, I would say, because, you know, who knows?
Yeah, strict guidelines.
Yeah. So then, I don't consider the Kings a rival.
I was just going to ask the Kings, man. I hope there are Kings fans listening right now to that. I'm just going
to. Why would they subject themselves to this? Not even enough of a rival to actually be name checked on your podcast. But yeah, there's definitely something there. Like, it's so clear to me that both these teams care about the other one. Like,
they very much do.
LeBron doesn't just talk about anyone, you know. He specifically talked about the Clippers. And I know RJ was like hyping him up on that podcast, whatever. Like, it clearly meant something to him that those guys were calling him out.
Mm-hmm.
And I, obviously he takes slights, seemingly at everything, but I don't know. I just felt it more with LeBron. You feel it when Patrick Beverley talks about the Lakers, like this being in the same building, being in the same fan base, you know, competing for the same affections, like that clearly means something to both of them. And I just don't think it can be a rivalry until at least one playoff series. You know, like I'm willing to bend my rule a little bit. There has to be at least one playoff series because, you know, if you're just playing regular season games, like what's the point? You know, like that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Even if the NBA puts them at like every, you know, pivotal tent pole night of the season.
But I feel like that's part of it too, is that so the way I kind of look at it is everybody wants it to be a rivalry. Would you agree on that?
Like
everybody,
oh, totally. Totally.
Everybody involved or indirectly involved or whatever, everybody wants it to be a rivalry to the point where, like, you know, the Clippers fans always like to say that the Lakers live rent-free or the Clippers live rent-free in Lakers fans' heads. And it's like,
sure,
you're damn right they do. You're right. I mean, at some point I would charge them just to get
I would argue they're paying $64 million to live in our heads.
Yeah. Like, I just, you know, it's been so passive aggressive to this point. I hope it gets like aggressive aggressive this year. I really do, just because, and we already started to see it. Like we were, LeBron was one step away from mentioning Patrick Beverley by name. And yes, Richard Jefferson was really doing his job as a host, and it was fantastic hosting by Jefferson to really push and prod and give LeBron enough tequila to like get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think that this year might be that year where, because I think they're going to see each other in some kind of a series. And also just because like, you can't have this much tension. It's kind of like a TV show, right? Where, you know, a character, you can't have two characters that either.
It's so almost like a will they, won't they.
Right. Well, I was going to say, it's like two versions of it, right? Where it's like, you either have the will they, won't they aspect of it, right? The Jim Pam kind of thing.
Sure.
Or you have like the Sansa Stark and the bad guy in Ramsay's Bolton, right? Ramsay Bolton, where in Game of Thrones, where at some point they were going to have to face off. At some point they were going to, so either you, either they're going to have to kiss or kill each other, one or the other. And I kind of feel like this is going to be the year where we finally see that come to a head, because they're going to see each other like 7 times in the next month or something wild.
Yeah, the NBA deserves it. You know, for all that went wrong in 2020, missing out on that series was a real downer.
Yeah.
And all due respect to the Nuggets, they deservedly beat them. You know, they mm-hmm. played really well. They
gave us a great time on
the Western Conference Finals. They really did. But I would have liked to see it. And I think you're absolutely right. The NBA is trying so hard to make this happen.
I think this is the year we get it, but we'll see. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Pete and I will be back tomorrow to preview LeBron's, what is it, 18th season in the NBA, and kick off our player preview series there. We're also going to talk a little bit about our expectations for the preseason, so stay tuned for that. Again, another reminder, check out the Silver Screen and Roll podcast, where Sabrina and I talk some more Clippers Lakers stuff and all of that over there. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks, Sabrina.